Well, as you can see, this is joint work. Most of it is joint work with Chris Fuchs, and it's a talk on decoherence from a quantum Bayesian perspective. So before I start describing this, let me give you this very, very simplified picture of the measurement process, which, in view of the discussion this morning, is almost certainly going to get me into trouble. So a common view of what the measurement looks like goes like this here on the blackboard. So you start with the quantum state, and then the operator rho. Then there is some measurement interaction. And an important part of the measurement interaction is decoherence. So the system interacts with the system, gets entangled, and then if you look at the state of the system alone, it's a mixed state. And then it can be written like this. And the next step in the measurement process is somehow either a process or an interpretation of this uncontroversial object here as a, well, situation in where one of these rho I is actually the true one. We just don't know which one. So we have a set of possible states with their probabilities. And of course, it's a different thing from this density operator here. And then finally, there might be a selection of one of these states as the final true one, which is selected from this ensemble of states. Now, this is the uncontroversial step here. I put question marks here because, of course, this is where all the hard work in many of the approaches to quantum foundations lies. And I'm not going to say anything about what these, not at all trivial steps from here to here and from here to here, what they may involve, because the quantum Bayesian approach is one that really puts this picture entirely in a different order. So it's a completely different approach in which decoherence is a completely different place than in this more, I'd say, more traditional way of looking at it. So this is an introduction. So I'll start by saying something about the quantum Bayesian program. It's very much rooted in Bayesian, subjectivist Bayesian probability theory. So I will need to say something about that as well. Then I talk generally about the problem of updating, of conditioning in Bayesian theory, and which brings me to an explanation of the reflection principle, von Frassen's reflection principle. And then at the end of the talk, I'll apply this to the this scenario here. Okay, so here's a quote, which I'm pretty sure everybody is familiar with, but it doesn't hurt to read it out again. It's the EPR criterion of reality. So it reads, if without in any way disturbing a system, one can gather the information required to predict with certainty, that is with probability equal to one, the value of a physical quantity, then there exists an element of physical reality corresponding to this physical quantity. That's a quote. So that's the EPR criterion of reality, and it defines what, first sight, a very reasonable idea of what one might mean if one called something real. And there's a second principle here, which is, I'm sure, is rather loosely formulated here. Let's say you have an EPR scenario. So you have a particle at A, a system at A, and a system at B. They're space-like separated. So locality might be formulated like this. A measurement at A does not in any way disturb the system at B. And as we all know, these two, the EPR criteria of reality and some suitably formulated principle of locality, they contradict each other. This is the result of the analysis of the EPR scenario. So the EPR criterion of reality plus the principle of locality leads to a contradiction. And the details, I mean, one can say lots about the details, but they don't concern me here, because what concerns me here is how one moves on from that contradiction, how one resolves it. And there is, I mean, since we have two ingredients here, and they lead to a contradiction, one of them must be wrong. So we either must abandon locality, or we must abandon the EPR criterion of reality. And so one way of characterizing the quantum Bayesian program is to say that, we take the second route. We reject the EPR criterion of reality and try to see, to explore this idea as fully as possible and see where this leads one and what the consequences are, what one can learn from this approach, from taking this rejection of the EPR criterion of reality very seriously. So very closely related is the rejection, similar rejection of the eigenvector eigenvalue link, just as another example of what one abandons in this program. So let's say I have a quantum state and I measure an observable of which the state is an eigenstate. So I have lambda as the eigenvalue, psi is the eigenstate, and I measure the observable. So the outcome lambda is certain. I obtain the outcome lambda with certainty. But again, according to quantum Bayesianism, there is no element of reality corresponding to lambda prior to the measurement. So we take the idea fully seriously that unperformed experiments have no outcome. Unperformed measurements have no outcomes, and apply this even to this situation where, at first sight, one might say it would be unproblematic or uncontroversial to assume that such an outcome, such a lambda, exists actually before the measurement. There's good reasons for this. I'm not going to go into this, but just to give a flavor of the problem. Now, I label this Charybdis. At first sight, this might look like Scylla and Charybdis, but I mean, we found that exploring this actually opens up a lot of new ideas and a lot of really exciting insights, so that in the end, it's not a monstrous approach, but really, I believe, the one one should be taking. So the theme of this conference is novel approaches to the quantum state. So of course, I should be saying what a quantum state is, and here it is. A quantum state, rho, represents an agent's personalist probabilities or Bayesian degrees of belief concerning the results of measurements. So it's probabilities, but it's not just probabilities, it is probabilities interpreted in the personalist Bayesian way. For instance, the way that was pioneered by people like Ramsey and De Finetti, later Savage, or explained in Bernardo and Smith's book on Bayesian theory. Okay, so I mean, I say quantum states represents probabilities. This representation is very direct, again, something that probably nobody really needs reminding of. But the correspondence between state and probabilities is very direct and very immediate. For instance, if I have an information in the complete POVM, then a quantum state is directly represented by a vector of probabilities, namely the probabilities of getting the POVM outcomes. So the one step we're taking at this stage is saying these probabilities are not something you find in nature. They don't correspond to reality. They're not objective, but they're strictly an agent's degrees of belief. I said these probabilities can't be found in nature, they're not objective, One way of seeing that this is not an unreasonable way to think about things comes if you look at the question of priors. So in Bayesian probability theory, any probabilistic argument starts from a prior probability, a prior measure or a prior probability measure. And similarly, in quantum mechanics, all quantum state assignments depend on a prior quantum state. And that might seem surprising at first sight, because, I mean, after all, you would think in a lab you can prepare a spin in any given state you want, and then who would then challenge the statement that the spin actually is in the state you prepared? Well, this way of thinking overlooks that the perturbation device is a quantum system. So the idea of taking a classical perturbation device and preparing a spin in a given state just takes this naive idea of a classical world and a quantum world that somehow link up in some well-defined way, which of course we know can't be really made to work. So a perturbation device is a quantum system, and therefore the prepared spin states always depends on the prior state of the device. So the quantum formalism is such that you can never get out a quantum state unless you also put in a quantum state at the beginning of the argument. And one way of summarizing this is to say quantum mechanics does not provide a rule for choosing a prior quantum state. So the prior state you start any argument with cannot be extracted from nature. Quantum mechanics doesn't tell you how to choose it. It's something that that the agent provides. Okay. So that's point when I can maybe contrast this picture here with what this would look like for a quantum Bayesian agent. So I mean here I just put down rho. If this is a state of nature, if this is something objective, then if it's an objective thing, then you don't need an agent here, because any agent looking at whatever the system would come to the same conclusion. So you would have this state rho here, which exists agent independently, and the same might be true in such an objectivist picture for the probabilities and the future rho is here. Here in this quantum Bayesian view, I cannot abstract from the agent, so I have to start from the agent's degree of beliefs here. So there is a quantum state rho, and then, well, the agent analyzes the measurement device, writes it on a POVM, and comes up with a set of probabilities and potential measurement outcomes. So this is all the state of belief of the agent prior to the measurement. And then, and that was put very nicely by David Merman in his talk this morning, then the next step, namely how it comes about that the agent experiences one of the outcomes. That's a primitive. That is a fundamental. That's the starting point. Measurement is in this approach is a primitive, which is ultimately just given. So we have this very different picture from this one here. I mean, this picture here ends in row K, not in K. So I put another. And I put a dotted line, which I explain in about 20 minutes. So I have an agent. The agent is always, quantum mechanics is always about the agent's beliefs, the agent's experiences. So we have got rho k in here. And well, is a raw experience, k, this is again a state of belief. So I come back to that picture. So it's a very different way of looking at it. Okay. Briefly, I mean, often when I give the talk about the subject, people when they hear a state is a degree of belief, it's subjective in the sense of being a function of the agents. It's about the agents. Quantum mechanics is about the agents, probabilities, and not about sort of true states of nature. They would have the impression that things are arbitrary. And, well, they're not. Because it's one of the triumphs, I would say, of Bayesian theory in general, and also of this approach, that the sort of normal functioning of science, experiments, analysis of experimental data, etc., just works exactly the same way as in any objectivist approach. And so here's a way of saying this very, very briefly. So this is a way of finding within this subjectivist, personalist, Bayesian approach concepts like frequencies, chances, and credences, which are often in other approaches used to analyze things. So because obviously a Bayesian can analyze a repeated trial, and in a repeated quantum trial, it's convenient to a pointer here. Okay, don't need a pointer. It's convenient to represent a prior as a sequence of states. One, two, three system states. It's a sequence of density operators, and they need to obey a consistency requirement. So let's say row two must be the partial trace of row three, etc. So you need to be able to get every of these states by tracing out the extra system on the next one. It's an obvious consistency requirement for the sequence. And now the usual experimental situation of a repeated experiment corresponds to what's called an exchangeable prior. And exchangeability here means nothing but that each of these rows in the sequence is symmetric and the exchange of the subsystems. And the quantum definiteness theorem says that if the prior is exchangeable, it can be written in the form given below. So it can be written as a mixture of a convex combination of states of the form rho cross rho, etc. So states where each subsystem is in the same state. But thank you. Hope I won't hurt myself with it. Thanks. So this is a probability measure on the state of on the space of density operators. And so what can you do with it? Well, you can use this object to predict frequencies, of course. It is very easy. I mean, basically what this form means is that it's frequency data are the only data that you need to use in order to update probability distributions. So this is a form that makes it extremely convenient to learn from frequency data. So analyzing experiments is straightforward. Then if you want, you can interpret this expression here as a credence of a chance, just as a way of talking. If you like the language and if it makes you feel comfortable, you can just in many situations act as if you had an unknown true state, like a chance, and a credence function over that. There's no need to do that, but if it helps one sort of think about things, then there's no harm here. So within this Bayesian picture, you find frequencies, chances, credences in a very, very natural and easy way. Now, I go back to probability theory. Just read you two quotes. The first one is from Ed James, who wrote that we think it unlikely that the role of probability in quantum theory will be understood until it is generally understood in classical theory and in applications outside of physics. Now, what he had in mind was an understanding in Bayesian terms. In 1984, Bayesian theory was a very marginal activity and not really mainstream at all. And by the time of my second quote, just 10 years later, this had changed very much. In 1994, Bernard and Smith published a textbook on Bayesian theory. And since then, I think Bayesianism has become a mainstream way of looking at statistics and probability. And this is relevant for our approach. So it reads, Bayesian statistics offers a rationalist theory of personalistic beliefs in contexts of uncertainty. Big words. With the central aim of characterizing how an individual should act in order to avoid certain kinds of undesirable behavioral inconsistencies. The goal, in effect, is to establish rules and procedures for individuals concerned with disciplined uncertainty accounting. Now, this we would like to apply directly to quantum mechanics. So quantum mechanics is, in this picture, is about individuals concerned with disciplined uncertainty accounting. And of course, quantum mechanics is very much about uncertainty, measurement outcomes generally being uncertain. So let's continue. The theory is not descriptive in the sense of claiming to model actual behavior. Rather, it is prescriptive, normative, in the sense of saying, if you wish to avoid the possibility of these undesirable consequences, you must act in the following way. So that's Bernardo and Smith. OK, so now I'm going to show you how, in Bayesian theory, I mean, one simple way of seeing what these undesirable consequences are and what Bayesian must do to avoid them. And this is the simple betting scenario can be used to set up the Dutch book argument. So let's look at a very, very simple bet. You have a lottery ticket. You have an event E, an uncertain event. And the ticket pays $1 if the event is true, and this, of course, doesn't pay anything if it isn't. So, and a definition of probability, a Bayesian or decision theoretic Bayesian decision of probability, would go like this: that so the probability of event E is simply it's a function of the agent, so it's what the agent assigns to this event. And it is simply the fair price the agent, it is the number that the agent regards as the fair price for the ticket. And the fair price for the ticket is defined directly in terms of the actions of the agent, because the agent is indifferent to exchanging the lottery ticket for its fair price. So he would be willing to buy the ticket at the fair price and to sell the ticket for the fair price. So that's sort of an operational definition of probability here. And the undesirable consequence, of course, in this context, always losing money. And we can even narrow this down. The undesirable consequence is to lose money for every possible outcome. So say if you lose money if E obtains and if not E obtains, then of course that's certainly bad. So, and that's the only kind of undesirable outcome I'm going to talk about here. So this leads us to the concept of Dutch book coherence. An agent's probability assignment, so here's a definition of coherence. So an agent's assignments are incoherent if they can lead to a sure loss, and otherwise they are called coherent. Let me explain this a bit more. They're incoherent if there is a situation where there is some combination of tickets, a single ticket or a combination of tickets, just a few, I mean, not many, just a three or four. I've never seen a Dutch book arguments with more than four different tickets. There's such a combination where the prices are such that the agent regards the prices as fair. So they correspond to his probabilities. He regards all these prices as fair, but where for every single possible outcome of the random variables of the events, the agent actually loses money. So that is certainly undesirable, and that's what we mean by an incoherent set of probabilities. And whenever, so that's what incoherence means. So coherence alone now implies the set of properties here, which are the usual probability axioms. including a number 4, which is, well, in many approaches, probability just a definition of the conditional probability, which is here a theorem. So what I mean by this is the following, that if you violate any of these laws 1 to 4, rules 1 to 4, you can show that the agent is incoherent. So you can show that there is a simple set of tickets that the agent regards as, with tickets variations that the agent regards as fair, which leads to a Schulhoff's. And a Schulhoff's in a single instance of this. Okay, now here's a quick plan for the rest of the talk. So there's two questions I'm going to ask. First of all, what does Dutch book coherence imply for Bayesian updating? So does it, what kind of constraints does it put on updating, on say learning from data, updating your probabilities when you acquire new data? And the second part is, what does Dutch book coherence imply for quantum decoherence? Which of course is respect to these sketches on the backboard. Okay, so here's the scenario I'm going to look at now. So it's classical. So I have two events, and they happen at different times. So the agent is here today. It's now, of course. So now, know everything about now, and now is today. Now is always today, isn't it? Yes. So the events happen tomorrow. So D is the event. The atmospheric pressure is below some value tomorrow at 9 a.m., tomorrow morning. And E is the event. It rains tomorrow evening. And the agent, we assume as probabilities today for E, for D, and also the joint probabilities and the conditional probability. So the agent has all these probabilities, all these beliefs, and is willing to buy and sell lottery tickets at these also with these prices. Now tomorrow at 9, the agent looks at the barometer and concludes that D is true. The pressure is indeed low, and so now he updates his probability for rain in the evening to some new probability, which you call probability new of E. So it's just this new probability tomorrow morning. So now, of course, we would like coherence arguments, dashboard coherence arguments, to tell us something about how these probabilities are related. And in particular, of course, we want them to tell us something about this function probability new of E. So let's see how this works. Here's the standard Dutch book argument for conditional probability. Now, this looks complicated, but it isn't. This ticket here is, well, in this approach, a definition of conditional probability. So this conditional probability here is the price the agent regards as fair for this kind of ticket, for this ticket here. And this ticket pays a dollar if E and D both obtain, and the ticket is annulled, made void, if D doesn't occur. Because if D doesn't occur, then probability of E given D shouldn't really constrain the agent at all to do anything. And if D is true, then of course E given E is the same as E and D. And how do you make a ticket void? Well, simply by restoring, by repaying the price. So this is why this ticket is worth exactly the same as this amount here if D is false. So in this approach, probability of E given D is simply defined by this ticket. Now consider two other tickets. First, this one here, simple one. So it's worth a dollar if E and D both are true. And according to this way of looking at it, the probability of E and D is the name for the fair price of this ticket. And then we have one that makes this additional assumption. This is a bet on not D, So the fair price, if it paid a dollar, the fair price would be this year. But since this pace is supposed to pay only this amount, well, then we have to scale this fair price by the same amount. And that makes the assumption of the linearity of utility. So these three tickets together now can be used to make a Dutchburg argument that shows this, unless this familiar formula here, or fourth probability axiom, is true, then some combination of these tickets here will lead to Schur loss. So in practice, it means either selling the blue one at this price and buying these two at that price, or vice versa, depending on whether the left hand side is lesser. I mean, it doesn't follow directly, but if this is not fulfilled, it's relatively easy to show that you can come up with a combination of those that lead to a Schur loss. So this is a Dutchburg argument for this formula here. And this is actually everything the standard Dutchburg argument can say about the situation. And if you look at it, one thing comes clear immediately. It says nothing at all about the new probability for E. So in a way, this has helped us combining the agent's probabilities today, because all these terms here are the agent's probabilities today, now. But it doesn't tell us anything about the probability the agent should adopt tomorrow when he finds out that D is true, or if he finds out that A is true. And this point, as far as I know, was first made by Ian Hacking in 1967, who realized that really the Dutchburg arguments don't say anything about updating. So, yes, so it looks like an impasse. Dutchburg coherence does not put any constraints on tomorrow's probabilities in terms of today's probabilities. But we're going to see now that it constrains today's probabilities in terms of tomorrow's. This looks counterintuitive at the moment, I think. But let's just expand this. So we need to slightly add something to the scenario. Well, not really. Let's see. So again, we have the same event as before. D is pressure low tomorrow morning. E is rain tomorrow afternoon. And the agent has probabilities for all these combinations here. And in addition, he has something else. He actually has a probability. Well, he has a belief about his probabilities tomorrow. After all, the agent is thinking about what should be tomorrow's probability, or what is going to be tomorrow's probability for the event. He might be looking for an updating strategy. So we're assuming here that in any event, what he has is some belief about his probability tomorrow. So if Q is some value here, we're assuming that the agent that's regarding this as an event, and I mean, it's something that the agent clearly can regard as an event because he will know. The agent will know whether this is true or not tomorrow, whether his belief is indeed that probability of new of E is Q. So the agent has now a probability for this probability tomorrow. And now I'm asking again, assuming the agent is coherent, how are these probabilities related? Okay? And this leads directly to von Frassen's reflection principle. So to simplify the notation, I label this proposition here, pro new of E equal Q by big Q. So that's the proposition that tomorrow's probability of E equals Q. And I make the assumption that the probability of big Q is positive. So the agent, the only assumption here is that the agent has an opinion, has a belief about it, and regards this as possible, so that this probability is positive. And then there is a Dutch book argument that shows that the probability of E, that's rain tomorrow evening. I get easily lost in all these things. So probability of rain tomorrow evening, which is ultimately what we're interested in all this, but at one level, what we're interested in this game here. Probability of E given this event Q is equal to little q. So if you expand that, it looks ugly if you expand big Q by this expression here. But if you do, then you see that it looks almost like a tautology. It just means that if assuming the agent says, well, assuming tomorrow after receiving the new data, I believe that the probability of E is Q. Well, then I should, assuming that given that, a probability of rain should already now be Q. That's what this principle says. The Dutch book argument for it, I mean, it's the same kind of argument I just gave. It's just writing it down is really confusing because there's three different bets, and it doesn't really make much sense to put them up here. But it's an argument in a very, very similar style that shows that if you violate this this principle, then the Dutch book exists. So there is a scenario that you regard as fair, as a fair scenario in which you lose in every possible situation. So you are incoherent. Now, this kind of Dutch book argument here, I think they're a little bit diachronic Dutch book argument, and this goes back to David Lewis, who didn't publish it, though I think it was published by Teller in 1973, but it's usually attributed to David Lewis, but he did. The main idea here is not really that the Dutch book argument is a different kind of Dutch book argument. It's really the realization that all we can do is look at today's beliefs about tomorrow's probabilities. So that's the main innovation here. Okay. Now, I should say something more about this here. The reflection principle, like this, looks a bit dry and not immediately useful, but it's actually very easy, from given this, to derive that if an agent has an updating strategy now. An updating strategy is something that where the agent says, well, let's just see. I mean, I want to formulate a strategy that that allows me to simply write down probably tomorrow morning if this and this and this and this event, or if just depending on the data. And such a strategy, of course, is equivalent to writing down beliefs about tomorrow's beliefs. And the reflection principle, if you assume it, you can very easily show that the only coherent updating strategies are conditionalization by using Bayes rule. So this immediately implies Bayes rule as the only coherent updating strategy. Now, come back to quantum measurement. So now instead of having barometer reading and rain, I just take two abstract quantum measurements. So two PUVMs, one tomorrow morning, one tomorrow afternoon, one tomorrow evening. And the evening measurement is supposed to be informationally complete. I mean, it's just sufficient to say this could be any measurement. This would then I would get the same conclusions in the end. Okay, now I mean, if we look at this here, so the agent, I mean, EI together with this initial state rho here that you might initially have is immediately leads to this set here, pi rho I. The agent can write down the probabilities for the outcomes, and I mean the EIR is sufficient. You need quantum operations as well. But let's say the measurement is completely described, so that or the agent describes the measurement completely and formulates what the conditional states after the measurement should be or are going to be for him, and then he gets this set pi rho I representing really today's beliefs about tomorrow's probabilities. Represents the agent beliefs today about the state he will write down tomorrow after the first measurement. So what these quantities you say is that with probability pi, just the outcome probability of measurement of result I, tomorrow morning I calculate the probability of outcome j, and the evening measurement, according to this formula here. Because outcome I occurs according to the agent's probability pi. If I occurs, then rho I is the post-measurement state, and therefore the probability of outcome j needs to be computed like this, trace fj rho I, standard quantum mechanics. You're waving if that's fine. Okay. Now, this is precisely of the form of the assumptions of the reflection principle. Because I'm saying that this here, I believed this to be my new probability tomorrow with probability pi. So I can apply the reflection principle directly to this, and with very little manipulations and some very little quantum mechanics, what I get is this, that my probability for outcome j, so for the outcome in the evening measurement, today should be given by this formula here. Just the convex combination of these expressions here. With the question, with this probability pi. And then, of course, I can just transform this, and I get that this is equal to trace fj times some I pi rho I. And since I assume that fj was informationally complete, this just means that my state today for computing measurements outcomes tomorrow evening should be this red expression here, some pi rho I. And that is exactly what in the, well, let's say, more usual approach to quantum measurement is what decoherence achieves. There it's a physical process. Here it's simply something that happens as a consequence of the reflection principle in the agent's mind. So what we get here is really, I'm getting rid of some arrows. It's actually a pity if you, this is such a beautiful black board, and if you wipe it, it gets terrible, smudgy. So what you get is this here directly, like in this here. And then from here, by a reflection, so this would be the reflection principle. Here we go here. And this is what the coherence looks like in this in the quantum Bayesian approach. The last thing I haven't commented on is this dashed line here, this dotted line to rho k from k. So if this, the agent gets result k, and now this is not exactly the situation where tomorrow the agent has got the experience k, has found result k, and now asks himself, well, what should the new state be? And, well, there's no, once it's tomorrow, there's no coherence argument that says the agent must write down row k at this stage. So the agent at this stage, once it's tomorrow and he's got the measurement, is not constrained any longer by any dashboard coherence arguments. But what constrains him is when he writes down his updating strategy at the beginning here, which of course includes the prescription to update to row k if he gets k. So in this sense, there's only a dashed line here. It's less fundamental a step than the others. Okay, thank you for your attention.
I'd like to make a brief comment and then ask a question about something that goes back to the beginning of the talk. The comment is that I object to the hijacking of the name Bayesian by the subjectivists. If you were at my talk this morning, I had a classification of probability theories in which there was a logical inductive inference theory, which is objective, and subjective degrees of belief theory, which is subjective, which are very parallel to each other, both of which are really Bayesian. So I don't like to use the word Bayesian as subjective. You can say objective Bayesian or subjective Bayesian. That's a comment. My question comes
Can I just briefly respond to this? I agree with you. It's imprecise. And we're trying to be careful just to always talk about personalist Bayesian or subjectivist Bayesian when we talk about the approach to probability. The fact that we call ourselves quantum Bayesians, that's a historical accident. But
I have a question that goes back to the beginning. You referred to the problem of state preparation and mentioned that in most formulations of quantum mechanics, that's kind of a black box. It is assumed that we can prepare a system in a certain state. There is, of course, literature on state preparation, which not everybody may have entirely agreed with each other, but an essential feature is usually agreed to be that state preparation involves a many-to-one mapping. You start out with the system in a totally unknown state, and you map it onto the desired state. So it necessarily involves an irreversible physical process to do it. So it's not. I agree that there's a problem with state preparation, but it's not a totally unsolved problem. In your approach, you replaced it by the problem of prior probabilities. Well, that seems to me to just lead to an infinite regress because there's always a prior before the prior, you know, so to speak. There's no first prior that unless it's the prior that we had on the day we were born, which isn't terribly relevant. So I'm not sure how your approach really does any better job of resolving the problem of state preparation in terms of priors than two things.
The first one is that. It's not hard to show that whatever preparation interaction you set up, that you can always find a prior state for your apparatus that gives you a different final system state than the one that you intended to do. They may be contrived and unlikely, these apparatus states, but without specifying the initial state of the apparatus, you're not going to get a range of states. Right? You're not going to get a unique output state for your preparation. The other question, actually, I see this as a vindication of the subjectivist Bayesian approach more than anything else, because the infinite regress happens to somebody who tries. For the subjectivist Bayesian, the Bayesian, the prior is not derived from anything. It is the agent's belief, wherever it comes from, that's the starting point. So therefore, there is no infinite regress there.
You just
resolve it doesn't it by go. Fiat. It doesn't go further than those.
You just say the agent comes in with a prior belief, and you don't care where he got it. Whereas in we care about the initial state of the apparatus.
This is really hard
to get that right. You don't care about your agent. He comes in with whatever belief he comes in with, and it doesn't matter.
On the contrary, the agent cares deeply about it because, for the agent, it guides his decisions. So, he cares more about it than anybody else because say, financial and other decisions depend on this prior. It's not if you look at the theory, then you see you just cannot get away from the problem of the prior. So instead of, if you try to derive the prior from something, then you get the infinite regress. If you take the subjectivist viewpoint and take the prior for, something you really need to start from, you just realize you need to start from it and you can't reduce it to anything else, then you avoid the infinite regress.
I was always thinking of these Bayesian rules and some meta rules that every probabilistic theory have to satisfy, be it classical probability, quantum probability, or any more general probability. And that's the strength of this approach. But it's also weakness in a sense that you can't really then know why the probability space in quantum theory is such as it is. So do you see any, do you think that Bayesian approach alone would give the structure of the probabilities we know, or the state space as we know in a quantum theory, or this would be ingredient actually outside the Bayesian approach?
Chris and I have just written a long paper on exactly that question, how to get the structure of quantum state space in the Bayesian approach. And it is true that you need an ingredient, not an ingredient outside of Bayesianism, but an ingredient in addition to just Dutch book coherence. So Dutch book coherence alone is not going to give you quantum state space. But that doesn't mean you need an ingredient outside of Bayesianism. And we have managed to formulate a number of desiderata or axioms that are all phrased in Bayesian terms that, get you a long way towards deriving structure of state space, but it's work in progress. The idea is, tentatively, that the Born rule or the axioms that lead to the Born rule is to be understood as a empirical addition to Dutch book coherence. So simply avoiding sure loss isn't enough. There's something else that really is contingent on the nature of the way it is that you need to add. But it's certainly going to be in Bayesian terms.
Not sure how much point really there is with this, so just take it as a comment, I guess. But I was really bothered by your discussion of the EPR argument at the beginning. I mean, you made it sound, I think, quite explicitly as if what one should take away from EPR is that there's a contradiction between the EPR criterion of reality and the principle of locality. But as a summary of the EPR argument, that's really misleading. I mean, there's a third premise involved, which is some claim of quantum mechanics to something along the lines of the position and momentum of that particle over there aren't simultaneously well defined right now. What EPR, those three guys, no doubt had in mind themselves as the resolution of the situation that they described was those two properties for that distant particle do both exist, and so the criterion of reality is true and locality is true. So, clearly there's no direct contradiction between those two things. Now, of course, we know, 30 years later, Bell comes along and proves something else that's sort of relevant to that, but then it's even more misleading to say that there's a contradiction between locality and the EPR criterion of reality, and so you decide to stick with locality and dismiss the criterion of reality, because what Bell proved actually is that there's a contradiction between locality and anything else, because locality itself can't be maintained if you want to insist on empirical adequacy. So I was just sort of bothered by the motivation for the whole program that you gave, but it probably has, you know, sort of neither here nor there on anything about the program. So.
It was a very cartoonish description of the conflict, but certainly the program is meant to be one possible resolution out of the difficulty that the EPR scenario gives you. But then certainly clarification is welcome.
Anybody else? If not, let's thank Rüdiger again.